Today, I'm going to talk about the librarian, the closet, and the empty room. It sounds, you know, I always like trying to come up with interesting and fun titles, but let's be honest, I think today I've managed to achieve romance novel status with this title, right? And when I was looking for an image that would represent that, I ended up coming up with this one, The Dewey Decimal System of Love.
That's a great book.
Have you read it?
Absolutely.
All right, so a real book, and I did check. You do, in fact, want to go to 306.7 to get more information about this. We won't go into much more detail. The other thing I wanted to do, the probably better title for this, is the idea of radical librarians. We need a radical shift in librarianship to ensure the success of our communities, those that we serve, and the continuation of our profession. I firmly believe in the power of librarians, the power of librarianship. I believe in the future of it, but I believe that the great power that we have comes not from our continuation of practices that have been built up over 4,000 years, but the constant reinvention of the profession. You know, it's interesting when you talk about things like farmers, and you say, oh, farmers, we've had them for a little while. Right? Since those little hunter-gatherers got bored chasing buffalo, whatever it is. But a farmer today, while we see a kinship with the profession over thousands of years, is hardly the same profession doing the same thing with the same tools as the person who discovered how to grow wheat. Right? Now we have gene-modified crops and combines and all this wonderful stuff. Librarianship is the same thing. The power of a profession to endure over millennia is for it to honor its past and constantly reinvent itself to prepare for the future. And that shift is a radical shift. So what's interesting is we use that word radical a lot. I mean, everyone sort of likes it, except for when it includes Islamic extremists after it. But this idea, someone, can we use advocate? Well, yeah, but radical is much more fun. And what's interesting about radical is it's a great example of why I love the English language, right? Because already, just in people remarking on the title of the conference, you've heard that radical means many different things to different people, from, you know, people talking about the 60s and then people talking about, isn't this a fun idea? Well, so if you look up the definition of radical, it's actually got three major definitions, three major meanings. The first is actually fundamental. When we talk about something like a radical appendectomy, it doesn't mean that the doctor was, like, you know, crazily, you know, showing up in cut-off pants and ripping out your appendix and giving it to the masses. That's not what a radical appendectomy is. It means they took the whole thing. So in biology, we talk about radicals. It's what you take from a plant so that you can replant it and keep it. It's the root system. So to be radical really means fundamental. That when we talk about radical librarianship, we're talking about fundamental changes, but based on our values. The other one is extreme, right? So this is where we talk about leftists and this kind of thing. But the notion is that we're talking about extensive change. So we're going back to our roots to find that change, but that change is pervasive. And then the last meaning, which is much more interesting, is, of course, given to us by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 80s, which means excellent or cool or rad, right? So radical. Now, what I love is if you put these three things together, I think you have a really good definition of librarianship. We're people who look to make extreme radical change in a fun way. When we talk about radical changes to the education system, radical changes to librarianship, what we're talking about is making big changes, but big changes based on our fundamentals and big changes that ultimately should be really interesting and fun to do. So I'm going to spend a little time with you this morning talking about radical change, because I believe school librarians and all librarians need to institute radical change. So we're going to spend a lot of time in definitions, but I promise if you stick with me, we'll get to the cool, pretty pictures. So where did the actual title come from, this closet and the empty room? So this is a quote that I put out that many people have pulled from the Atlas, that I have long contended that a room full of books is simply a closet, but that an empty room with a librarian in is a library. Now, I get two reactions when people bring up this quote. Either they bring up this quote going, yeah! Clearly not here. or I get, no, that's not right. What about the stuff? What about the institution? So people who tend to take issue with this quote do things like, well, you're a librarian, but you need a library to be a librarian, right? Think about when you went to library school, those of you who did, because I believe, by the way, you can be a librarian from three reasons, three means of becoming a librarian. By your education, you have your master's of library science. By your job title, you were hired as a librarian. Or by spirit, that is, you may not have librarians, but you go home and you organize your sock drawer in various ways. We'll get to that in a moment. So the main criticism of this, that defining a library by a librarian, they say things like, well, wait, you can't, you know, is this sort of like, you know, the Frozen scene where, you know, as Elsa is walking by, the, you know, crystals of ice form behind her, and as we walk into phone booth, suddenly it's transformed into a mahogany-rich area of leather chairs and reading. No, that's not what I'm saying. So, but they say, you know, you need materials, you need a space, you need an institution. Get to that in a second. The other one is, no, it's an institution. In other words, when you join, do I have anyone here from the Porchester School District? I would like to thank you for my wife. She went through the Porchester School District. And the reason I'd like to thank you is that she is instilling a fantastic scholarly work ethic in our children that I lacked very much in high school. So thank you for saving my children from my guidance. But the idea is that when you join the Porchester School District, or you join whatever, you know, you didn't create the library. There was a library program there. People come into the institution thinking about libraries. All of this, institutions matter. And in fact, one of the things, not to put too much pressure on your shoulders, but looking across the entire profession, realize that you set the tone for how people, this entire society, is going to interact with libraries in the future. Right? We've all talked to people about, what do you think about a library? Oh, they suck. When was the last time you were in it? Oh, I was at the school library, and she was so mean, and whatever. You're going to give them the image of, this is a place that's helpful, this is a place that's friendly, this is a place that's exciting. You're going to set the tone so that by the time they get to college, they're going to understand what it means to do research and information literacy. By the time they move out of college and into business and parenting, etc., that they know that a library is a place that's going to support them. You set that tone. I teach a couple of sophomores, and I ask them, how do you use the library? And they said, well, I go to my high school library that I still have the login for and get all the information I need because this one stinks, right? I love that kind of pressure. That's the kind of upward pressure we need. So the big argument around this quote is that it discounts the word library. In fact, it's very interesting. The title of the conference is Radical School Libraries. And that's the idea that we somehow love to invest power, reputation, performance, everything into an institution. It's not allowed to be us. It's the library. And I'm going to go, and I'm going to say this is the radical shift, is this way of defining librarianship and defining libraries and defining librarians by the institution and the building and the program and the stuff is no longer useful, counterproductive, and in fact is holding back us, which is holding back our communities. So let me walk you through why I say that. So let's start with the problem of definition. It is unsatisfying, to say the least, to define librarians by a library. But we've all done it, right? We do. What's a librarian? It's someone who works in a library. You went to library school. It's like, day one, well, you're going to work in a library, you're going to catalog, you're going to do this, and this is what you do. And all about maintaining this institution. We're not too far away from Darien, Connecticut, that came out with the Darien statement. And if you have a chance, Google the Darien Statement on Libraries, because it is an astoundingly interesting document, but one of my favorites is the librarians serve the library that is eternal. I mean, you know, it's great rhetoric. But it's just like this idea that somehow we bring offerings to the library. It's like, you know, second graders come in homage, and we sacrifice them. It's
And look, this is Penny. Take Penny.
So, but, you know, you sit there and you go, no, Dave, we define librarian. Well, this is what the Oxford English Dictionary uses to define what a librarian, to define you. A librarian is a noun. A person, good, typically with a degree in library science, who administers or assists in a library. So, what are you? People who maintain a library. This is a problem. Now, most people reading go, yeah, so, it's fine. But this is a problem. This is a problem because you run into things like, there are plenty of librarians that don't work outside of a library. As school librarians, many of your hours and time is not spent in the room. In fact, what we know to be successful is to get the hell out of that room, right? We know that librarians work all over. They work in Overdrive, they work in the vendors that we're talking about, they work in banks, they work all over the place, right? So this definition doesn't necessarily fit them. And then the other side of it is, what about all the other people that make a library work, such as clerks, aides, security, janitors? Are they librarians? Right? So what's interesting is, in the public library sector, anyone you walk in, anyone that's dressed somewhat nicely is a librarian. Right? Sir, can you help me? No, I can't, because I'm lost. Right? This I have to do mental checks every so often. How many people have a compulsion to do reference? And it's defined the following. You are visiting a foreign place. Could be another city, could be another country. Someone stops you on the street and they ask directions. And you try and give them directions. I was in, and I'm not making this up, Florence, Italy, and someone said, excuse me, do you know where Il Duomo is? And I'm like, well, let me. I'm like, no, follow me, because I'm trying to figure it out too. It's insane. So is this the definition we want? Anyone that's in that building. And in New York State, this has real, real, real important ramifications because we have legislation that says they have to be certified school library media specialists in middle school and high school. But in grade school, anyone will do. Are we happy with that? Are we okay with that? In California, they don't even have them anymore. So we need to spend some time saying, if we define the librarians by the building, we run into this problem. So that's not going to work. The other problem with this definition is it assumes we know what a library is. Now you're sitting there going, Dave, this is a keynote, not library school. Where the hell are you going with this? But stick with me for a moment, because it matters. So this is the definition of a library from the Oxford English Dictionary. Now, I'm going to discount the software library. I'm going to discount a room in a private house that's a library. Fine, we'll give them that. But these first two are kind of interesting. A building or room containing the collections of books, periodicals, and sometimes films and recorded music for people to read, borrow, or refer to, such as a school library. There was a minor discussion about what do we call us? You know, are we school librarians? Are we school media specialists? Are we information specialists? Are we like, I personally like the idea of knowledge ninja, but whatever the term is. Media specialist became problematic. I never realized it was problematic until I was in North Carolina and then someone told me the story about a school board meeting where they were going through the budget and they're like, why do we have a media specialist? And everyone's like, what do you mean? Why are we spending X thousands of dollars a year to get people work with the media? I mean, do you have that many newspaper articles about us? I'm like, oh, God. So, media specialist. Great. Now we're school librarians again. Life is fine. My point being, you know, or a collection of books, periodicals held in a library, right? Now, why is this a problematic definition? Because here's a room full of books that isn't a library. This is, and you are probably at some point to blame for this, right? This is the used book sale where every library in the world says, get this crap out of here, right? Because they tried doing the book sale through the public library, through the Friends Group, which is all staffed by ex-librarians who just take the books so they can keep them in the building, right? But this is where they finally escaped, and they're out in the book sale. My favorite story about this was our recycling agency up in Syracuse in Onondaga County has an annual book recycling program. You put out your books, they recycle them. I was on the public library board when this happened, and you, we got to save them. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, we're going to go in and get them. You know, the knowledge ninjas are going to free the books from Oprah. And it'll be fine.
And the librarian said, no, we're fine. No, really. And they're like, no, you go do it. They're like, no, we don't have time. We don't have time to do it. And I'm sort of listening to this conversation. And then someone goes, I run a Boy Scouts meeting. We'll get the Boy Scouts to go through and help them sort what we should say. And the librarians finally said, okay, look.
We went there, and people recycle things other than books, magazines of certain propensities.
And in essence, what happens in librarians and love, we don't want to be sitting side by side Boy Scouts as we're going through Hustler magazine from 1972. And so, but there's this idea that now it's a book, we got to save it. Well, here's the next step, by the way, of what we probably don't want a library to be, right? So this looks like a fine gentleman in midst of a great collection until you realize if you look a little bit behind him, you see a lamp and you see a desk and you see some drapes and you suddenly realize that this is this guy's house. This is a psychologically hoarder. The next step is this, right? Is this what we want a library to be? And frankly, let's be honest, does some of our libraries begin to look like this? Because the difference between a librarian and a pathological hoarder is sort of like we use canvas bags versus paper bags when we collect things at conferences. Right? So this, we're going to say, no, we don't want this to be a library. We don't want people, right? But this is the ultimate book palace image. And so when people say budget cuts are coming, schools have to cut budgets, what we don't want people to do is stand up and say, you may not cut the library because kids need access to books. Right? Because what that means is kids don't need access to you. And how many times have we heard conversations about, we will not cut teachers, but we'll cut librarians? And you suddenly go, point of order, certified teacher, actually. In fact, in Chicago, they had such a shortage of teachers, they took all the school librarians and they put them in classrooms to teach. So just if you're having a bad day, just imagine that tomorrow someone says, physics, you'll take fourth grade, right? And you're biology, yay, right? So there is a counter. The other problem is not only do we not want to be this, what about the things we do want to be that doesn't come under this sense of books, periodicals, and sometimes films and recorded music? This is the Onondaga County Onondaga Community College Library. And those are body parts, luckily plastic ones. But they do, if you look really close, they do have a dissected cat put in glass. Why is this in a library? Because they have nursing programs and health aid programs and biology programs, and so they literally loan out body parts, right? And then what about things like this? This is from Europe. This is the Prejudice Library, where you can check out a prejudice. Never talk to someone who's Muslim or gay or black or whatever. Check them out. And they do this. Now you see throughout the states, human libraries, where people check out an engineer, check out a lawyer. In Illinois, they created this fabulous program. They had the school librarians actually talk to the public librarians and create joint programs. And one of the things they created was they called it a teacher checkout. And for them, what that meant was that a teacher could come in and they had these ready materials. The teacher could just take them. They didn't have to wait in line or whatever it is. It was like sort of a concierge service for teachers. But when I heard this, I thought, wouldn't it be really cool if we actually could check out a teacher? So as a parent trying to figure out how a sixth grader and a freshman live in a Common Core era, I would love to check out a teacher and say, what the hell are you doing in math? 2 + 2 = 4. What's a number line? Why are you having to do blocks? I don't get it. You guys don't, you may have this, right? When your kid comes to you with fourth grade mathematics that you can't do, I want to check out a teacher and say, maybe we could spend some time on how I could actually support this. Right? Because it's not calculus they're having. They're doing division. And you just memorize 4 / 2, right? That's how we do it. No. So how this human library, does that fit into, and you can check out books and sometimes music, right? And this is one of my favorites, which will become relevant in a moment. This is what a library looks like in Kenya. In Kenya, they are building public libraries as fast as they can. And in the major cities, they're building them all over the places. Where they're a little bit more rural, they have built donkey carts, these massive carts with books that they can drag by donkey into these rural areas. And in the northern tribal areas, where it's even too remote for donkeys, they pack them on the back of camels and pull camels into this area. These camels come in once a week, once a month. They unpack them. They roll out tents. They roll out materials. And the librarian is pulling the camel. Yes, they have books and materials, but the librarian's thinking they're teaching them how to read, teaching them basic information. The camel is the predominant important species in these tribal districts. They use them for labor. When they die, they use them for food. They even use the, let's say, leftovers of the camels to power their stoves. And now the camels become equally essential because it brings education and knowledge. Is this a room or a book, a room full of books, materials, and sometimes recording? So that definition of library doesn't work, and yet you are part of continuing that concept on a regular basis. Because whenever you put the idea of a school library program, whenever you talk about radical libraries, you're not giving the credit to what really is important, which is you. Putting you front and center and making people aware that it's not the building that makes things interesting. So this is a problematic definition. Right? The other and major problem is libraries don't make a difference. We heard before about the importance of assessment. Libraries are useless and inconsequential to assessment. Now, if I had not given you the previous slides, you would be throwing things at me, but stick with me for a moment. This became very, very clear to me when Ferguson erupted. So you will all remember, there was just this minor skirmish in Ferguson, out in the suburbs of St. Louis, where the predominantly white police force shot an unarmed teenage black man. This led to rioting. This led to distress. This led to tear gas. This led to bullets. This led to a national discussion on race, which is certainly unresolved. They tell the story about how children were sitting, because what this did, aside from all the things you see, is it closed the schools. They closed the schools. And so you had children sitting up at all hours of the night listening to explosions, listening to gunfire, listening to looting and rioting, and their parents were sitting on the couch with baseball bats beside them in case trouble came to the door. And they were hungry, because a large percentage of this population was on free and reduced lunch, and the schools were closed. This was the narrative. This was the narrative of policemen. I don't know if you can see this. There are policemen dressed in camouflage gear. As someone, I think it was John Oliver, said, if you want to wear camouflage in suburban St. Louis, it should look like a Walmart, not like the desert. Right? They have body armor. They have attack dogs. The whole news narrative was, it's a race riot. It's violence. It's horrible. And then something happened. The Ferguson Public Library put out a little sign. It says, "Stay strong, Ferguson. We are a family." And not only did they put out the sign, but then they talked to the teachers and the librarians, school librarians, which had been cut, and they began offering classes in the library. Not only did they begin offering classes in the library, they then talked to food pantries and food services, and they brought lunches and food into the Ferguson Library so the kids could eat. And when they ran out of room, they worked with the churches, they worked with museums, they worked all over. And they created a safe place, and it changed the narrative. The story of we are a community of black and white and fighting was replaced to we are Syracuse, New York. We are Portchester. We are Rybrook. We are America because we're family. Now, what's interesting about this is when this was all occurring, and I tweeted out something like, oh, this is really great. And a librarian said, of course it is. Libraries always make things better. And I said, no. I said, a library doesn't do anything. A library exerts gravity and shields you from the rain.
That's about what happens. Librarians did it. Do you think seriously that the mayor and governor who issued a curfew and ordered the schools closed would have batted an eye if the librarian had gone to the mayor and said, I'm thinking maybe not today. I'm thinking maybe we can close. No, they would have said, fine, absolutely. But they didn't. They stayed open. The new director of the Ferguson Library walked around at night with a fire extinguisher in his hands just in case people pounded through the door. And they were pounding at the door. And he decided to stay open. I have a student who I told this wonderful story to about, you know, the Arab Spring and protests. And she, you know, in the summer, she's like, oh, that's really great. And then she went back and she works at the St. Louis County Public Library that serves the same school district. And she was in the middle of this. And what did she do? She said, I'm going to go, I'm going to set up things for kids to do, and I'm going to order pizza. And what they showed is that those librarians chose to make a difference. They made a decision to make a difference. They could have closed. They could have just been business as usual. They could have said, oh, our collections won't help you. Oh, here's a book on race riots. That will solve the problem. But what did they do? They chose to make a difference. And not every library would do that. And not every librarian would do that. But they did. Libraries don't make a difference. Librarians make a difference. And if you say, Dave, that's really great and all that, but I'm a school librarian and, you know, that's not my problem. Libraries don't make a difference. This is just a simple list, and if you do lots of searches, you'll find lots of them, and I'm sure Pam and the different, you guys supply many, many studies that show that school libraries, as they'll be titled, make a difference in student performance and student assessment. Except that's not what those studies show. What those studies show is an active school library media program makes a difference, which means school librarians make a difference. And because as a profession, we've become so obsessed with defining ourselves by our institutions, our facilities, and that word library, we're not getting the credit for what we're doing. If you want to make a difference in a school, you need a school librarian. Or else you have a closet full of books. We see this over and over again. You're the school library, so you need to be out in front of that. We need to define libraries by first defining librarians. We need to turn this equation around. So how do we define librarians? Well, first, we define them by their mission. The mission of librarians is to improve society. Feel free to stop there. Through facilitating knowledge creation in their communities. That's the mission of a school librarian, that's the mission of an academic librarian, that's the mission of an information specialist, that's the information, that's the mission of librarians. And it's your professional mission. Not the institution, not the building, not whatever, it's yours. Okay? So that's the first thing that defines us. But I put this mission up and other people say, that's me, I'm a teacher. That's what I do. Publishers. I'm a publisher. That's what I do. Google. That's what I do. Right? So that's not enough. Well, Google. I advertise. It's the same thing. Right? Whatever. So the other thing we need is how we fulfill this mission, which is our means of facilitation. And you guys know this, which is when you go to teach, which is what you do, when you go to teach, you must first provide access to knowledge. And here's the important part. Knowledge is a uniquely human thing. So what we're providing access to isn't books and materials and shelving. We're providing access to conversations, access to people, and access to things that will provoke conversations. And you say, that's really loud. And I say, there are lots of conversations. The majority of conversations people have are with themselves. And if you're sitting there going, what did he mean by that? Who are you talking to? If you woke up this morning and you opened the door and you saw your lovely car with that much snow on it and went, do I really need to go to this conference? Who were you talking to? Right? We do this all, it's called metacognition. It's called lots of critical thinking. When people are reading a book, they are having a conversation, but it's not with the book. It's just dead trees or bits on a screen. And it's not with the author, because if they're reading Shakespeare, it's a neat trick, but I don't buy it. It's with ourselves. Do I believe this? Is this important? Does it make an impact? And we know as librarians, that's not just with nonfiction and technical materials. It's with fiction as well. Right? Mine was, "My name is Asher Lev." When I read that in high school, I said, "I'm not alone and I'm not that weird." Right? That's what I learned from fiction. And that has been a much more powerful message than calculus. I didn't take calculus. Anyway, once again, thank you for my wife. So, this idea of what do we do as librarians, we don't get them access to stuff. Yay. We provide them access to kindling to fire their imagination. Every material on that shelf that you have, every article in the database, every piece of software you give to them is an explosive device that you're handing, back to radical, handing to a kid to hopefully blow up their world and make it bigger. That is radical. And that's what we do. We're book people. If you were book people, you wouldn't put them in plastic and put stickers on them and let people with little peanut butter and jelly hands touch them. Right? Book people, like, keep them and sell them and take them to eBay or hoard them. We are knowledge people. And what we know is that some kids and some teachers are going to learn from those books and those materials. We know that if we have the World Book Encyclopedia, kids learn how to spell by moving the titles around so they spell really interesting things. But that's not the point. We also know... Anyone? Yeah. We also know they learn from books, but they learn from their teachers, and they learn from makerspaces, and they learn from 3D printers, and we know they learn a lot from their peers. That's learning. So you're in the learning business. You provide access not just to the stuff, but to the people. When you come in, do you build a facility that people can talk and understand and say, hey, did you try this or not? Or do you build really big stacks that keep them all separated and they're like cells with dice bindings? Think about that for a moment. And do you provide access for their conversations to go broader? One of the things we love, the idea that we're somehow bringing the world into our schools, that the library is a gateway to the universe. But that discounts the brilliance that exists within your schools. Do you provide access so that your students with great ideas can share them with the world? Do you? I heard the publishing one, right? Kids publish, they become the author. Love it. We stack it. Do you then make that available to every other library in this room? Do you become their publisher so that they can suddenly be a publisher to the world? And I know there are privacy issues, and that's very important. And we need to take that into great consideration that we are dealing with a very special population, but that population has amazing ideas, and can we share them with the world? Can that library be the bullhorn to our communities about the greatness and inventiveness and amazing people that we have? We provide knowledge, information literacy training, how to make sense of the world. We provide a safe environment, intellectually and physically safe environment for them to do it. Libraries of all sorts are safe places to access dangerous ideas. We did several studies that looked at information literacy in the schools. Could we teach credibility in the schools, particularly internet credibility? And we said schools are the worst place to teach internet credibility. Why? They filter. It gets worse. Not only do we, right, that's the internet access, right? But let's face it, when you guys select materials and books, you filter. You don't want to be the person that stands up at the school board going, we need more crap in our schools. I want disinformation, I want lies, I want all the stuff on the stacks. And yet, how do we teach them how to make sense of what's good and bad and evaluate sources and credibility and what, unless we can show that to them? And so what happens is they go into your library and they have this nice protected garden and they don't realize it's that protected until they go home or take out their phones and they're doing the report that they're required on Martin Luther King Jr. and they go to martinlutherking.com, which is run by a white supremacist group, which isn't filtered at home. And we couldn't show them that because they couldn't get to it. We need to be radicals into exposing people to dangerous ideas and let them know it's okay to do that here. We're going to be here to help you. And motivation. How do we build on motivation? How do we get them to learn? And the third thing, and very important, are values.
What uniquely defines a librarian is our mission, our means of facilitation, but the values that we bring within it, that we embed and imbue within the students we work on, learning as a lifelong endeavor, not something you just do in school, as openness, that we believe that the greatest learning comes from the greatest diversity of resources, intellectual freedom and safety, intellectual honesty, not unbiased. You are not unbiased. Stop pretending you're unbiased. You lie, you lie, you lie. If you believe, how many people believe what I just said about the best learning comes from the richest and most diverse information source? Really? Yeah. All right. You should have multiple points of view on every topic. Really? You're like, well, yes, except, you know, climate change. But they shouldn't have access to diverse resources on climate change. But that's a bias. It's a bias. There's plenty, you know it. You've dealt with departments of education. You've dealt with curriculum that says, this is the only way to teach X. Not, mathematics has lots of approaches, pick one. So you, in some ways, have a direct value opposite to the rest of your building. Yay. But think about that for a moment. All right. So now we can define what a library is. A library is a mandated, meaning someone had to give it the authority to exist, whether that's a state law, whether that's your school district, whether that's a charter within a city, whether that's a budget line. A mandated but mediated space. Right? It's not that big book warehouse. It's not that empty room. Someone had to go in. Even if you are not directly working with a student, but you made the space in which they're working, you're mediating that space. If you chose to put computers right in the middle of your library, you have designed a space that's different for those who didn't. So you're mediating that space, even if you're not directly standing up and teaching. And a space is both virtual and physical, and is owned by the community and stewarded by you. That's what a library is. It's not books. It's not stuff. It's not a room. It's not something that has the L word on it, or the media center, or the information commons. I don't care what you call it. That's what a library is. And it starts with you, not the other way around. Right? So, the building, the books, the databases, those are just tools. And like a scalpel to a surgeon, those tools may change, but the profession remains, right? If I go to have surgery, I want to be really clear. I want the surgeon to have a scalpel because, you know, just going at it like that, not what I want, right? But they know it's just a tool because they used to use scalpels. But now they use endoscopes and they use cameras and they use lasers, freaking laser beams, right? They use all of this stuff. But they're still surgeons. That scalpel sitting on a table is not a doctor. A room full of books is not a library. A library media center that is empty and devoid of life, it's just an artifact. It's a shell. It's you that make it happen. That's the radical shift. In the past, we had libraries. We had libraries before we had librarians. And we had times when librarians were clerks. But they can no longer be that. Our kids can no longer afford school librarians who simply check things in and out. We can no longer afford the resources because education is so crucial to have you simply be facilities maintenance. We can't afford it. And you don't want to do it. Good God, that's the most useless task you have. I'm going to show you librarians who don't do that anymore. They don't shelve. Kids can shelve. Why am I doing this? So here's the quote again. I have a lot. You're sitting there going, yeah, kids can shelve. Yeah. All right, I'll grant you that. But I was at the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice has an economics library because they do this thing where they go and decide, can you merge? You know, can Comcast and Time Warner form the worst customer service unit in the universe, like a black hole sucking our time together? Anyone having that situation when your cable's out and you really need to take a drink before you call the number?
My wife literally shepherds my children out of the room when I have to call them because she knows the language that is about to occur. So I'm going to say, and I'm going to admit, and Pam will tell you what a monumental thing this is, I'm going to admit that I was wrong. She's laughing. She tells the story about how we were nice to each other. There was a time. All right. I have long contended that a room full of books is simply a closet, but that an empty room with a librarian. That's wrong. Because it's not just the librarian, right? So here's the new definition. I've long contended that a room full of books is simply a closet, but that an empty room with a librarian serving a community is a library. They may be doing that. Well, let's talk about how they're doing that. Sue Kowalski does it. This is her library. Sue Kowalski's East Syracuse Manoa, they're now in a big renovation. They're redoing the building, so they kicked all the students out. Right? They sent fourth grade down to this one. They sent eighth grade up to the high school. They moved them around, emptied the building. She went to her principal and she said, "You're buying me an RV." I swear to God. And they bought her a used RV, and that's her library. And what she does is she drives to those different buildings and she touches her student. She contacts her students on a regular basis and said, "How's it going? Where's going on? What can I do to help?" Not just, "Here's the book you checked out." This is not a bookmobile. Yes, there are books in it. But there are computers in it, and most importantly, Sue's in it. I don't think that's her, by the way, but Sue's in it. Right? I asked her to bring this up to the university to show our students. She's like, "I'm not quite comfortable enough with small roads." I'm like, okay. But here's an empty room with that's a library because the librarian's in it doing the service. Right? Here's another example. This is Joyce Valenza. All right, so I'm showing you the rock stars. This is her online site. This is actually her previous version, which I think is more fun than her new version, right? Where kids go online and they can find databases, but current events. They can create college and careers. This is her library, not because, oh, it's a website done by a librarian. It's because she's suing service and conversation discussion. When those kids go home at the end of the day, they still have a library. This is an empty room that's a library because the librarian's managing and mediating it. This is Cushing Academy, prep school in Massachusetts. And what they did is if you read the Boston Globe at the time, they got rid of their library. They got rid of all the books. That's not what happened. What happened was the librarians looked at their nonfiction collection, said this is desperately out of date and we don't want to continue to buy out of date books. We're going electronic. So they still have a healthy fiction collection, but they went all electronic with their nonfiction materials. Yeah, it's Cushing Academy. I get it. But anyway, sorry, Westchester County. All right, anyway. You can hit me afterwards. I get it. All right. What's amazing with this is he then made this resources available to the kids after hours, in their dorm rooms, wherever it was. You know what happened? He now needs to hire more school librarians because now the kids have questions at 9 o'clock at night and not just at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when they do it. He got rid of the physical collection, not because he didn't value libraries. He got rid of the physical collection because he valued librarians. And he trusted them in saying, this is where the kids need to be and the kids need to go and they need support and they need resources to do it. This is an example of an empty room that's a library because it has librarians serving a community. There's one other consequence of this radical shift, though. And it's one that we like to ignore, but it's very, very important. So important I took a drink. You are a facilitator and the value, but you're not the entire library. Once again, that little addition about serving a community is very important. You and the community share ownership of that library. Faculty and students co-own your library. What libraries have become is places for librarians. They've gone from places where librarians do their work to places that the community owns and a librarian helps facilitate. And in many cases, that means so the librarian can get out of that room and do the real work. Different idea. And so we see this notion about, this is back to Sue Kowalski, her I-team. This is I'll put these slides online, so the URL you can get later. But she created an I-team, stole it from us, but she created an I-team.
where students come in and they do shelf the books. And not only do they shelf the books, they pick the books. When it comes acquisition time, she puts out a collection saying, which of these should we get? Which one should we buy? And the kids actually go in through the acquisition system and do the purchasing. In fact, one time they screwed up and they said, oh, Ms. Kowalski, you screwed it up. I fixed it. The order went in. Why? Because what she does is she gives them ownership. She started with an I-team staff. The I-team staff now picks the next I-team staff. She has 50 I-team staff in her school. 50 students who come in and spend time. And what do? Shelf books, sure. They also teach technology. It's become remarkable where they get teachers who come in and say, I'm interested in using this new technology XYZ. And Sue says, I can show you that, but, you know, Ben's really good at it. And the teacher's initially like, no, I'm not going to learn from a student. That's not going to happen. And what happens is after she shows him and he gets problem and then Ben goes in and fixes it, pretty soon they realize that Ben's pretty useful to have around and they become like graduate assistants. Where the teachers actually come and ask for iSchool staff to help them on projects and help them support. The students co-own this facility. Now, Sue's still very much in charge. I want to be really clear here. Sue can say, stop. But the kids feel ownership. They feel part of it. They feel like they're building it. Here's an example. This is a public library, the Fayetteville Makerspaces. They built a makerspace, right? So it's got 3D printers, and it's got sewing machines. By the way, the librarians are much more afraid of the sewing machines than they are of the 3D printers. It's got tools and laser etchers and all this other stuff. And it had lots of teens and adults that came in and used it, but the kids were like little kids, elementary school kids going, what about us? So they built little makerspaces. And I know, it's cute, isn't it? The little makerspaces, they take broken watches, they take cardboard, and they make their own constructions. And this corner of the library is theirs, and they curate it. They go up and add and take away and change and move, and the librarians don't touch it because that's their space. They turn their entire library into a maker space. You may be making new ideas and new knowledge through reading. You may be making it on a 3D printer. You may be making it on a sewing machine. You may be making it out of cardboard, but you're learning, and that's what a library is all about. Last one, and then I'll get out of here. This is an idea. So this is a police officer in the DeWitt's. My school district, Jamesville DeWitt School District, and he comes in and he teaches kids in the middle school about things like cyberbullying. He says, we start with the 10-year-old and we start with sexting. Yeah! And he looks at us and goes, that's it going. So he had this evening where he brought parents in so that he could more or less say, this is what you need to worry about with your kids online. Sexting. And then, they have this app, and they have this app, and they do Twitter, and they do whatever, and you can just see the parents collecting going, right? And the parents, and he said, you guys make the Wi-Fi available to them with your cable. Do you know how to put the filters on those if you want? And the parents are like, you can do that? How does that work? So the idea was, the parents got up and said, we need to learn how to do this. Now, parents need to learn how to do this. Why am I bringing this up in a conversation for school librarians? Because the parents need information literacy, and I happen to know someone in the school district who specializes in information literacy. What's your outreach to parents? What's helping them with their information literacy needs? So we started talking about when the new app comes in or the new way to put a proxy server to bypass the filters that you didn't care about anyway. How could we train parents on this? Oh, it happens so much, and the kids know more than we do. Have the kids teach the parents. So why not have kids go and create screenshots and walkthroughs and demos of how you configure this, how this app works, how that, and then make that available online and work with the police department and whatever so that the kids are training their parents on a regular basis. And that should happen through the school library because we're talking about knowledge issues. So in conclusion, librarians are radical, positive change agents. It's not an oxymoron, and it's not even a metaphor. And it's not about, hippies with ponytails, because frankly, I wish I could grow a ponytail, but it's not going to happen. We're radical, positive change agents because we believe that we make society better by making our kids better, and by the way, making our teachers better. When teachers come into us and they have the look up Martin Luther King Jr. in the encyclopedia and write down what you find assignment, we should be standing there going, lovely assignment, could you just consider making it useful? right? And by the way, if you brought in multiple resources, and this is how you can do training. And by the way, you know what citation management is? And we can do citation counting here. And then they can create a video presentation of it, and they can mount it online for people to see. And the teachers go, cool. And by the way, the teachers go, let them run away. There'll be plenty to work with. And once they see that the kids are getting excited about it, working and learning more, they'll come. We are the radical positive change agents, not our rooms, not our books, not our licenses. If we want to produce exceptional students with exceptional learning, we have an obligation to be exceptional learners and exceptional students. How do we expect our students to constantly learn if we don't model lifelong learning? How do we let students know that it's okay to fail if you're willing to work at it? If we are unwilling to stand up before our students and go, I'm sorry, this broke, or I don't know how it works, do you know, and hand the mouse to them? If you're unwilling to do that, what message are you sending them in their ability to fail before their peers and their children? Eventually their children. For some, not so eventually. But anyway, this is what we're about. This is why we talk about radical librarian, radical librarians. Radical librarians. Not radical libraries, not radical books, not radical programs. Radical librarians. This is about change. Change doesn't stop with our students. We are not just going to reprogram and send them out. We must constantly adapt and change. We as librarians are not consumers. We are not simply picking the best books to buy, the best system to buy, the best license to buy, and provide it and say our work is done. We are not clerks. We are not at the mercy of publishers or test preparers, and we are not victims. Too many people have been willing to call the end of school librarianship and say it's a lost cause. We will not let it happen. The change that will happen, the change where we will get more school librarians in more school districts, in more states, in more countries, will come because you guys are energized and you show them the power of what a librarian can do. Not a library, not a program, a librarian. And I don't care if you went to your MLS 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 300, if you studied with Dewey, I don't care. It is time to stand up. I don't care if you're a year from retirement or 50 years from retirement, because it's irrelevant, because we never retire our brain. And you never stop being a librarian, because you, what you do to society is too damn important to put off. What you do with our students to prepare them for an ever-changing world is too important to hope that a standardized test gets at, or hope that a teacher locked in their class will eventually discover. We must go and save our kids. That's our job. That's what it is to be a radical librarian. That's what it is to be important. That's what it is to make a difference. That's what it is to be a professional. That's our obligation and our challenge. Thank you very much.
Okay, the first thing we do, take out your programs, the front of your program, and take a pen out. And where it says Radical School Libraries, cross off the ES and put ANS. We are Radical Librarians.